LSC Share Talk. This is Peter Higgins at Conker's Corner. Today I have at Stelsurf, also known as Jason from Twitter. And Jason runs a website called Trading Bases. Hello, Jason, how are you today?
Morning, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
You're more than welcome, chap. And I know you of old in on Twitter and regarding your website, and you've got a lot of information that I know that our listeners and our podcast viewers would be absolutely fixated with and will learn a lot from. And that's the reason why you've got you on here today. Now, Jay, you've got a fascinating background story regarding a lot of things. So I wanted you to just start with. Who's Jason? Who's StealthSurf? How did you start in investing, etc., mate, please?
Well, basically, StealthSurf is just it came along. I used to shape a few surfboards, so that's where that came from.
Great.
It's there's no sort of mystical sort of meaning for having that as my
Okay.
username. I actually never used to use Twitter for investing. I only used it just for sort of because I like surfing, and that's all it was for. So I was a bit late to the investing side on Twitter. But basically, my story is basically I've grown up with my granddad and my dad investing. So I've been sort of exposed to it since I was maybe, well, since I was born, basically. But I can actually remember
Yeah.
sitting sort of on my granddad's knee watching him punch all his numbers in off the CFAX on the telly, when I
This.
was probably 5 years old,
Yeah, good old CFAX, mate. Yeah, this is just
Yeah,
what.
so that's I've always been around it, but I've always been sort of too busy to have to get involved with it over the
Right.
years.
Okay.
But so what I did was, in my, I'm 46 now, and in my early 20s, I had a word with my dad, like he was in he'd got the investing bug as well through my granddad, and it was about that time I went to sort my pension out, and I went to see a financial advisor, and then I learnt about funds because I had to invest some money, and my dad said, well, he's got one of these and he's got one of those,
Yeah.
and so I thought, well, I'll go and see someone else. And it was probably the best and the worst thing I could have done, really, because he picked a few out, and obviously he picked the best performing ones, and probably the ones what gave him the most commission.
Yeah, that's the way it was in those days, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I was kind of lucky in a way, because when you're new to, I see this quite often in trading. When someone new comes to share trading and that, they'll buy what's going up, and they won't be afraid to buy it.
Yeah.
Then they'll get the fingers burnt because it when it turns around, and then it'll sort of go against them, and then they'll get in, a whole heap of trouble, and then they'll start going on this little journey. They call it the holy in search for the Holy Grail, don't they? Where they start putting indicators on and doing all this,
Yeah.
and then what they had in the first place, buying what went up, is probably the best way of making money.
Yeah.
But what failed them was the risk. The risk side of it, being able to keep that money.
Yes, indeed,
And
yeah.
this is where people start going into the other end of, well, I've got to buy it when it's down to make the money. And you get stuck in this big sort of churning cycle. And what I actually I had money in funds over the years, and I what I used to do is I split my money up into so many portions, and I'd put, say, 5,000 into one, 5,000 into another, maybe get involved in three or four different ones, and then when I got my statements through, so I was only getting a statement through every, say, 6 months or a year or whatever, I'd only add to the one what was actually working, and the one what wasn't working, I would, give it another statement maybe, and if it hadn't worked by then, I'd just cut it,
Right, okay.
whether it was a winner or a loser,
Yeah.
I sort of learned one of the best lessons in investing straight away, that you only add to your winners, and if you cut your losers, that it'll balance out and it'll work quite well. And by doing that, it actually got me out of the near the top of the tech bubble as well. Just by, you know, I was in a tech fund and I watched it go up, and then I watched it go up, and then I watched it come down, and then it went up a little bit more, back up a bit, but never quite went as high, and then it went down again, it went red. So I sold it, but I sold everything.
Right, okay.
And then I went surfing. I used to just go, you know, I'd work like crazy, and then I'd cash in, put all my money in premium bonds, put the rest in the bank, and I'd just go surfing for a year or so. And that's basically how I've sort of lived my life.
Well, that's not a bad strategy, because I think, sorry to interrupt you, I think what happens sometimes with especially with traders that do it full-time or semi-full-time, is that they end up doing so much in a sense of 16, 18 hours a day, because they're doing a lot of research and watching every single screen, that they don't have a quality of life. You know, for me, the most important thing to me is my family and my friends and spending time socializing with them. You know, so people say, Pete, you seem to be online a lot, but I actually do spend a lot of time with family and I'm completely away from the screen. I meditate, I do a lot of voluntary work, you know, and people are like, oh, how do you fit it all in? And it's about being organized, I think, sometimes as well, and knowing that there's far more to life than making money.
Definitely, definitely. I always say you can't buy your life back.
Exactly, mate. Absolutely.
And you can't. And the only thing with my life is I've sort of I never compounded it back in those days, you know.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And that's something I didn't, you know, I learned through my pensions compounding, but yeah. I didn't compound my own money. But in another way, because I wouldn't hold on to something if it went against me for a couple of statements, I never got caught in a bigger bear market.
Yeah.
And I did try and get back in when I came back from being 2 years away, and it didn't work straight away. So, you know, I could just, if things aren't going up in 6 months or a year, the timing's probably wrong. So, you know, I was investing back then.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And the thing with investing is it's another thing. It's like you say, it's quality of life and time. You know, if I was going to go back to investing now, I would sort of spread my money in a few different funds probably.
Right.
And,
okay.
And I'd have my life back again, you know, and that's probably how I'd do it. But now I do. Basically, I came back from 2 years in Australia, and I needed a couple of knee operations, and I ended up having four knee operations and a neck operation. And it's one of those things that I just needed them sorting out,
mm-hmm.
and it was going to put me out of action for a while. So that is how I actually came to be in front of the computer every day.
Yeah.
It's just, I had to make a decision. I sat with my dad and I said, you know, I'm out of action here. I don't want to go back to working in a factory, because I'll just sort of damage sort of my bones a bit more.
Yeah.
It's, you know, should I give it a go? And that's basically what brought me to sitting here now.
Okay. So was that the time when you had the vision of setting something up yourself, or were you thinking at that stage, I need to use the time I've got out of action to start trading/investing, or was that the time when you thought, right, I'm going to set up trading bases? What came first? Are you thinking?
Well, the website was kind of came last, really.
Right. Okay.
Just, I mean, basically, I had to do something, and I was lucky that I worked when I was away.
Right.
And I came back without spending any of my funds for once.
what work were you doing, Jason, sorry?
Just working for friends in Australia. Right, I lived on the northern beaches in Sydney for a while, and I've got friends in New... It's, the surfing community is kind of... You get to meet people around the world. And so I worked in New Zealand, I worked in Australia, and I'd do sort of visa runs to Bali or wherever. And so I came back, you know, it was when the Aussie dollar was really strong, so I actually came back a lot better off than I was.
Right. Great quality of life, and you made some currency movements as well. Fantastic.
Exactly. So it was more a case of I had some money, you know, I'd never say to anyone, just, you know, you've got to have some money behind you to be able to sit in front of a computer, and better still, if you've got a business where you can just work an end of day sort of system, You know, you need some money to rely on. I was in a catch 22 where, you know, I couldn't do the kind of work I've always done, which was pretty heavy plastic molding sort of work in a factory. And, you know, I had all my cartilage really tried to mend my cartilage in both my knees, and then I ended up going back and having it removed.
Right,
and then I had to have a disc removed from my neck as well. Yeah. So it was sort of the sort of work that I knew I couldn't go back to. So it's just, I had to make a decision, and I had a couple of years to sort of fund myself and put the work in what was needed.
Yeah, okay, well, that's understandable. The only thing I would say, and is that what you're saying to me is not a great advocate for surfing, unfortunately, is it?
Well, this is it. You know, I thought I'd get a bit more time to surf, and I've surfed less in the last couple of years than I've ever surfed. But you know, it's one of those. Maybe one day I'll be living by the coast and I can surf my lunch break.
I'm sure you will, mate. I'm sure you will. Given the success you've had as well, the whole point is to not to be trading and sitting in front of the screen forever and getting out there. And, you know, I've got my view in the sense of, you know, my family and I, we're always going to be going to the coast at some point, you know, when we get to our 50s, and that's going to be it. Get away from the city, get away from screens, and just see that, you know, that lush of water and grass and green, you know, that's what it's about.
That's it. I mean, you know, I mean, what I do now is I am in front of the screen, but in a way I can get away from it if I want to, you know.
Yeah,
but with the trading bases, it was more a case of I was just getting so many direct messages on the Twitter. I used to post charts and that, and I just thought, you know, maybe I could just start a website just for the members. And what I actually did, I started the Twitter first because I wanted to cut out all the noise, because the way I traded, I traded that way and that was it. But then as soon as I posted something, I'd get all these different opinions.
Yeah.
And it was just like noise. And, it's, you know, it's not going to stop me trading how I trade.
Yeah.
So I started a private Twitter just for the people who was really interested and was asking me the questions, and you know, it's like giving some, you learn your mistakes and that, and then, you know, it's a very boring sort of lifestyle, really, trading. You know, you do a lot of sitting around waiting, so it's just a way of passing the day and helping other people, really. And
indeed,
I've met some sort of really cool people who come up with some really good ideas, and you know, we'll share ideas, and you know, everyone's happy.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter's been absolutely phenomenal for that, and that's part of the reason why we started LSE Share Talk, because the social media movement and the sharing of information is growing so fast. And like you say, there's this fantastic network for meeting people and sharing ideas. It's going to be a force to be reckoned with when these individual, you know, individuals, entities that are now dominating, they'll have to start thinking, oh, how do we reach these people who are no longer conversing with us, you know, because they're on these private forums, like you say.
Yeah. And I'd say that as well, you know, when you meet people who just, because the reason I used to post all my swing trades and then people would sort of follow your trades, and but they don't know how your position size or anything like that.
Yeah.
And as you know, it's like three people could take exactly the same trade. One could be a winner, one could be a loser, and one could be flat. And
yeah,
and it was exactly the same entry, exactly the same trade, but just the way the position sized and how they traded that trade, you know, could give three different outcomes.
Yeah.
So what I decided to do was, you know, I thought, well, I'll do this. It's actually going to be easier to start a website, Wheelie Dealer actually helped me out. He said, I use this, I use that. And he showed me sort of the website he used. And so I went down that route. And then I ended up having to sort of put a bit of my own money up to sort of get someone to do it for me anyway.
Right, yeah. No harm in that, mate. Yeah.
But, you know, so I put my money where my mouth is. And, you know, I bought a name for it. And I started a website. And what I've done is I've just compiled all my sort of trading, what I've learned, my style. So anyone who sort of follows my style of trading, they know exactly how I load a trade and, you know, I give them exact sort of requirements or variables of sort of how you should manage that trade as well. And I also give them a spreadsheet to do it, a proper, you know, position sizing, you know, all the things you need for longer term stuff. And there's more in depth ones as well, what they can purchase for, members can purchase for a very small, you know, less than a sort of monthly fee. Okay. And that's what it is. And it's not a money making scheme. A lot of people think it's a money making scheme when you start a website, but there's some very good people out there who run sort of websites. And my view is that it will save you money if you go to someone and get yourself someone who trades for a living, get yourself a mentor,
yeah,
or whatever. And there's a price to pay to learning. And I pride myself on the website as being, you know, the early members are £10 a month, and I've had really good feedback. And they can come for 1 month, they can take the spreadsheet, what's got a lot of hours of work in it, and they can take what they want, and they can leave, and it's happy days, or they can hang around and sharing the ideas and all that. And it basically, with a bit of luck, it'll pay for itself this year, and hopefully, you know, that things, it might help pay for my share scope, or it already has helped, you know, yeah, by people getting, I give people free membership if they're taking up share scope or share pad, and it all helps because you've got fees to trade in. So it's not, some people talk of it as a business, but it's never going to be a business at £15 a month. It's just something I thought I'd share. I put a lot of work into it, and there is no secret sauce in there. It's completely open, and you know, it's just risk management, money management. That's what it's about, basically. It's so that's the website plug.
No worries. I would love somebody to discover it, because I mean, it's a brilliant website, and you've touched on a very, very great point there, Jason. I mean, it happens all the time. I see it on Twitter all the time. I get DMs about it all the time, and there are very expensive lessons being learned every single day. And even last week, with regards to the Brexit, 4 out of 5 of the largest hedge fund guys around the world lost absolute stacks of money, because everything that their teams had put together said Remain would win. Okay, so they stacked there and loaded their positions regarding a Remain victory. And they lost shed loads of money on Friday morning and Monday morning. And then they decided to go with the curve and started to put short positions on late Friday, because it was going to get even worse on Monday, and put even more positions out on Monday. And now we have the FTSE at the highest position it's been since last August.
Yeah.
So there's expensive lessons to be learned out there. Or you can use somebody like yourself, or read some books, or take your time to just learn different strategies rather than taking expensive lessons where your account blows up.
And also not just learn and read about strategy, actually prove
it works. Yeah.
You know, I have the slower trend following strategy, which is like I trade, you know, bases and I add to the trade on a pullback after a pullback, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the slow trend following style, but that style hasn't worked since June, July last year. You know, it's just been chopping up and down, and we took some trades. And you know, one thing that the members sort of, and I do share these videos as well, is people get so zoned in on the daily charts, and you've got to look at the big picture across all indexes. And and by doing that, I'm pretty nimble in the market, because the way I sort of size my trades, I'll probably only hold a maximum of up to 15 trades, but sometimes I'm only holding 6 or 7 because I position size at stop. I could have a 10% stop, but I could have 15% of my portfolio in that stock.
Yeah.
That's how I just trade like that. I don't buy weakness on anything. I wait for it to base out, and I wait for it to show strength. So I could be buying I buy my full position. I keep it very simple.
Yeah.
You know, I'll buy my full position, and then if it does a second base or a second entry further, you know, as it moves up, I will trail my stop up and I will add to that position. So I could be 20, 25, 30% invested on my best ones.
Right.
But on my worst ones, I will just lose 1% of my portfolio.
And exit, yeah.
Jason,
obviously there's lots of people that haven't visited your website yet, and they will do. Far more will visit them after this. Could you just do me a favour? For those that don't understand it, and there are a lot of experts out there that still don't do this, could you just, in layman's terms for me, please, for those, explain position sizing very, very briefly?
Okay. When I used to invest, like I said, I'd just put 5,000 in each stock or whatever. Yeah. And then I'd, you know, that's one way people, what do you call that? Is it allocating?
Allocation.
Sense of capital.
Yeah.
But when it comes to position sizing, it's not a case of, this is only a pound, I can buy so much, but this is £10, I can buy so much of this. It's actually a case of, if you've got a 10-point stop, say you've got a 10% stop on a setup, on a base. You know, before I take a trade, I'll go, you know, that's a lovely base. I think I am wrong if it trades below that base.
Yeah.
And I should only enter the trade if it trades above. So that gives me, if it trades above this level, it shouldn't trade back below that level.
Yeah.
You know, on every time I am correct, that setup will work.
Yes.
You don't want to go, if it trades above this level, I'll just put my stop under this bit here. But it's not below the base, if you know what I mean. Because you could get chopped out of that many times.
Yeah, you're looking for strong resistances, aren't you, and strong supports all the while. And you're looking for the momentum to work consistently.
It's not just bases as well. It's reversals. And an important thing to remember, if you want to buy something and hold that for years,
yeah,
you've got to be able to sort of prove it's actually going up on a monthly chart, not a daily chart.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I could give you, I think an example was probably Quantum Pharma.
Right.
Let me just punch it into my machine. Hang on a minute. And if you put that on a monthly chart, I did trade this up, actually. I traded it up from the IPO, and then it broke down below its monthly. You know what a hammer is, don't you?
Yes,
You know, it broke down below that monthly and closed down on the month, and that's a reversal on the monthly. And then if you'd have, you know, took a short on that and put your stop at the top of that monthly bar, you would still be in that short now, because the lowest monthly bar was back in January. And, you know, you could have your stop at 110, and it's still, you know, that is the lowest bar. So until it actually trades above that bar, it's not reversed on a monthly. And this will keep many investors just out of trouble.
Yeah. So would your advice be then, for those that haven't cottoned on to this strategy then, would yours be about following a monthly chart rather than a daily chart? Or would you be talking about 100-day moving average, exponential moving average? What's your strategy?
You can break down. I like to break things down to things what happen in every successful trade.
Yes.
There's no, so in every reversal,
yeah,
you'll get maybe a V bottom, which will be quite a low percentage.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. Say you know, 25% of bottoms are V bottoms. Then you'll get either a double bottom or a higher low, and then you'll get a higher high.
Yeah.
So if you limit everything you want to buy, you say, look, I want to see a higher low on a time frame. You know, if you want to be in something for years, you've got to be able to see it on a monthly chart.
Yeah.
If you want to be in something for weeks to a year, you've got to be able to see that reversal on a weekly chart.
Yeah.
If you want to be in something for days, you've got to be able to see it in a daily chart. But there's no problem with going down onto your daily chart to put your entry in. But if it hasn't reversed on the big time period, you're just guessing the bottom, basically.
Right, okay.
So what I use, and I don't use daily moving averages. All you need is two moving averages for trend. And the less you use, probably the better you'll do.
Okay.
Technical analysis is not some mystical sort of science. It's just basically a way of filtering out things that are going up, things that are going down. And the main thing it does is it lets your position size. So by saying, you know, we've had a reversal on this monthly chart or this weekly chart, the weekly is a good one to use. It's reversed on a weekly. If I put my stop under the low of that move because it's moved above this level, and then I measure how many points that is, and I divide my risk by that. So I'll position size. So if my stop is hit, it's 1% of the account.
Yes, I understand that, yeah.
And that could have me 10% invested. But what that does is I can be wrong 100 times before I blow my account.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, I swing trade as well, and what I do with that is, because I can be quite tight stop, say, I had one the other week on the BA that was less than 1% stop on it, and I had to put a guaranteed stop on it just to cap the heat, you know. That.
Yeah, yeah.
And see, I forgot where I was up to now.
He was talking about the BA, and you put your position in, but you wanted to put you put a guaranteed stop in there just because it was. I'm thinking you were using that because of the volatile nature of the market.
Oh, I was using that because having such a tight stop, it would have had 40% of my portfolio in there, but by putting a guaranteed stop on, maximum gap risk, was cut. So you know. When it comes to position sizing, you know, different time frames, you know, wider stops on wider time frames, tighter stops on swing trades, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically, but that's where I was up to. I risk 0.5% on a swing trade because it's tighter and because of the margin.
Right.
So I can be wrong 200 times before blowing my account.
Exactly. I get that.
I can take my brain out. But what trading tighter ranges like that does is... It doesn't matter. The price of the share never comes into it with my way of thinking. Basically, it's just how much I risk at stop, and it's 1%. You always want to be 100 trades away from
blowing your account up. Yeah.
And another thing is, when the market is up, which brings me back to these moving averages, if the 5 and 20 month is rising on more than half of the markets what I follow, like the US and the UK markets and the small caps and the large caps, then, you know, if the 5 and 20 are up, then the trend is up. If they're mixed, the trend is sideways like it is now.
Yeah.
And if they're down, the trend is down.
Yeah.
So, you know, just using a simple filter, and I use that for my stocks. I'm only interested in stocks what are trading above a rising 5 months, which is like a 100 day.
Yeah.
But I use the monthly because of share scope that the 5 will still be rising on a monthly, but sometimes you'll get wiggles in 100 and it'll cut stocks out of my screens.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason I use these, and I've just got used to them. I know where all the other averages are without even having to have them on the screen. It's just by so much chart watching.
Yeah.
And I know my moving averages so well that, you know, I use a 5 month. So let's just say we're using 100 day. That the whole industry works. If it's above the 200 day, it's bullish. If it's below, it's bearish. And if you half of the 200 day is the 100.
Yeah.
So if it's above the 200 and it's rising, it will naturally stair step up and down on half of that 200, which is 100.
Yeah.
So if you put a 100 and a 200 moving average, you'd see that anything going up is stair-stepping up on it.
Yeah, steadily up, yeah.
On a rising 100. And anything going down is stair-stepping down under a falling. And that is all you need to know. You know, okay. If you just, you know, so you shouldn't have so much stuff that you get totally confused, you know.
Well, the great thing about using that strategy then is, and having used it myself in the past, I use the exponential moving averages as well, is that it filters out a lot of the companies that you don't want to be touching. Because like you say, you don't, unless you're looking to short a company, you don't want to be buying into a company that's on a downtrend. The difficulty I have, and my strategy differs to yours, is that I'm essentially a contrarian investor. So I'm looking for the stocks that have been on a downtrend and potentially could have a catalyst, i.e. a new director coming in, a new product being launched.
Yeah.
You know, they're in a sector that's undergoing a lot of M&A. So, you know, there are opportunities there. But if you are going to be strict and disciplined, you should never be touching stocks that are on a downtrend, which is exactly what you're saying, isn't it?
There's another thing you can say, and because the way I position size, it doesn't matter what price I get, you see. So
yeah.
That's why I don't have to look in that area.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But another thing is, you know, I can tell you where all the best stocks will be. They will all, at some point, be at 52-week highs.
Yeah.
You know, all the best stocks, at the beginning of all the best runs, will trade there at some point. So, you know, we know where to find them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what price we get in at them. It's how tight your stop is. It's, you know, if you were risking 30% at stop, you know, it's got to move 60% just to make twice what you risked. But if you get in at with a 10% stop on a tight, yeah, you know, it pulls back and puts a tight little pattern in, like, yeah, a little bull flag or something, and you get or a tight base,
mm-hmm,
and you get a 10% stop, and then all of a sudden it starts that big trending run where it goes up 100%, you've made 10 times your risk.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll trade anything, and I don't get too lost in the fundamentals.
No, that's good. That's good. I just wanted you to just come back a little bit, because I don't want people to miss what you just said, in a sense that all the best stocks will be in one place, and you just said will be at 52-week highs. Now, for some people that are new to investing or even experience, that sounds like an anomaly to them, but I understand what you mean. Could you just reiterate and explain that for those that don't?
Well,
because for some people, it's almost like they've missed out on the opportunity then.
Yeah.
If it's moved so far and it's now reached a 52-week, it's like, oh, it's too late for me.
Yeah.
That's the natural thinking.
And I'm talking new 52-week highs.
Yes.
That's important.
Yes.
One.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
the important one.
Yeah.
So say with something like Tesco, let me just bring it up. I did a bear piece on this for someone a few years ago, and I got so much grief for it. but there's a few things. Well, I'll just name drop a few books. You know, I believe.
I like my books. Go ahead.
I believe in the William O'Neill sort of principles of growth. You know,
one of my favorite books. Yeah,
I trade towards accelerating growth. And if you take everything off your chart, you know, bases, something's rising, you can see accumulation in the volume on the price at the important levels on the up days. And the same with distribution, like Tesco through the end of 2000, well, from 2012 through to 2014 was being distributed on every bounce. It got distributed and then it got absolutely axed. And there was no secrets in the chart all the way down, but it was pumped on the news, you know, Tesco this, Tesco that. And I think,
yeah,
even Warren Buffett.
He bought in.
You know, but when you see these adverts on the telly and that, you know, it's because someone's paying them to create liquidity in the stock so they,
yeah,
can position, you know.
Exactly.
It's just a big pitfall. And all you saw with Tesco's was it make 52-week lows in sort of, was it 2011?
Mm.
It bounced. Every bounce was sold into.
Sold into, yeah.
And now, if I look at it now, it's actually trying to base. But when everyone was trying to buy it back in 2014, you know, it was so far away from basing, it ties your money up for usually a year or 2 years. You know, Telecom Plus has been doing it as well, and many others will be doing it in the future. But the leaders will actually move above 52-week highs and above. When I come back to reversals again, being able to see it at least on a weekly chart, you know, a higher low and a higher high.
Yeah.
And Tesco's, it kind of put a higher high in, but it never put a higher low in.
And it
pulled over again, you know. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, it's put something what looks a bit like a double bottom. It's you know, so far away from being a buy, but it just, you know, if you put a weekly chart in, it looks, or a monthly, you've got a double bottom, and it could do as long again, building the base, before it even decides to move up, if it decides to move up.
Sorry, Jace, what happens though, as you touched on, is that there's certain stocks, and Telecom Plus was one of them, and Tesco's obviously was one of them many, many years ago, is that everyone has their favourite stocks. The fund managers have their favourite stocks. Marks and Spencer's is a favourite stock for many people, BP, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And then what happens is that those fund managers and those people in the media will come out and start talking, I won't use the word ramping, but talking up a particular stock because that's their favourite stock. And they know that lots of institutions and fund managers are actually in that stock. Yeah. Doesn't mean it's a good stock to buy.
It's the favourite stock until they've dumped their position.
Exactly.
And then they move on to the next one they need to dump. And you see, the advantage you have as being a private investor, trade or whatever, it's you can be nimble, and these guys can't be nimble. So you've got to align yourself with that. Cut the news and actually look at the volume and see if it's under distribution. Another thing what a lot of people get caught out on is when the fundamentals, you've got to remember that companies top out on the best fundamentals and they bottom on the worst.
Yep.
So when something's all rosy and good and growth is great, you know, it was like Next. I won't mention too many of these stocks. Yeah. I annoy people, but I was bearish on a few things.
Yeah.
And I know people hold stuff like this, but I put a line at 72.85 on Next, and it traded down below that and went through 52-week lows, and it just hit heavy distribution, and it did base out and have a little false break above the base, but it was into decelerating growth. So, you know, it's all right. It's a great, it's been a cash cow, and Next.
But yeah, it's been a fantastic company for many people.
At some point, growth will roll over, and it rolled over, it only dipped on Next, but, you know, that was time the institutions had to start, you know, getting out of the thing.
Yeah.
And you've got to be contrarian, obviously, that when things are at their worst, they can only get better.
Yeah.
If it's a good company.
If it's a good company, yeah. Assets. No,
And I'd rather not guess that.
Yeah.
I can't afford to guess that because I've got to turn over the account quicker.
No, I understand that. I was gonna touch on your account, and I think you've covered some of it. But as an investor, Jason, how would you describe yourself? I know you say you've got to be in and out and turn over the account and all the rest of it, and you've got to generate an income. But as you're very disciplined, so how would you describe yourself overall?
As an investor, which I don't do much of anymore, I'm a trend follower.
Trend follower, right. Momentum as well, yeah? Trend and momentum.
Yeah, you can split my trading up. The trading basis style is I will trade anything, but what I will do is I will only try and have a few large caps. Something like Telecom Plus on the way up was a good one.
Right.
And obviously Trifast, and I had VisualLink on the way up, and I had Advanced Med Solutions on the way up, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I will trade those and I will build positions. I will add to winners until they top. And I think Trifast, I actually sent that one over the cliff actually, because I had to dump my position, but you know, that was a good one.
Right.
So
I'm right. So up. Just to confirm for
people that's trend. That's yeah. trend following.
Yeah. So just to confirm to the people that are listening to this is that you will hold a stock for as long as it's in trend and carry on rising.
Yeah.
So you're not saying you're a long-term investor or a short-term investor. If the trade is winning, you're going to run with your winners and cut your losers.
I can hold a trade longer than I held an investment in the past.
Right. Brilliant. Okay.
But another important thing is investing gets a bit lumpy, should I say, in markets like this. And trend following gets very sort of hit and miss in markets like this. But we don't know when it's going to get better again or whether it's going to get worse before it gets better. So I'm very nimble, as in the markets made a major break last year. And before they had that awful run down, me and a couple of others in the room, you know, I put out this sort of all the indexes that broke down and put lower lows, lower highs, lower lows in. And then it had a rally to resistance and it failed. And we got out before the break. And I was half out before the break.
Yeah.
And I got out on the break. I got out in the first 10 minutes, everything else. So I'm pretty nimble. And, you know, when I only hold about 10 or 15 stocks max, you know, that got me out of all of those.
Yeah. So it's like you say, the great thing about charting is that you can see the trend ahead of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And before the noise arrives as well.
Yeah. And another thing, a very important fact about trading is heat. And this needs sort of covering in depth.
Yeah, go with it.
People don't understand sort of how much trouble they can get themselves into in this business. And markets, you know, people think, well, markets always go up, but they can go down for 20 years. You know, they can go down as what happens in the future is completely unknown, and we will never know. And in the past, they've gone down for long periods. So there's something called heat. And when I'm building trades, if I put a position on in a bull market where all the indexes are clearly rising, I risk 1% at stop, and I will limit my heat to 10% in a bull market. So if the market, you know, if we had one of these terrible markets, sort of black swans, and everything gapped down, I would get chopped out for 10% plus or minus any slippage.
Yeah.
And that's all I will limit my account to, you know. And if something isn't working, there's no point me adding more heat. You know, because if I take my 10 best ideas and they're actually not going green, that's telling me straight away that my 10 best ideas aren't going up. The market isn't suitable.
Yeah.
The market doesn't want to go up. And that's what we've had over the last year.
Yeah.
But once the market broke, I halved that heat.
Yeah.
And I put that to 5%. And I upped my sort of, you know, I'm only going to take the very best ideas that now. I'm not going to just, you know, sometimes your best ideas can be your worst and your worst can be your best.
indeed.
And that's
yeah.
just the way things go. But
that's the nature of the markets. But, it makes a fool out of everybody. It doesn't matter if you've got 100 billion or you've got, you know, £100,000 account. It doesn't matter.
When the markets did roll over, it's not load the boat time. It's I'll risk 5% heat of the account. You know, if this is just going to be a V bottom,
yeah,
these five trades will move and I'll be able to trail the stop. And as I trail, say I trail two to break even because they've had really good runs, that allows me to add two more positions.
Yes.
So I can only add positions. And until the whole markets that across the board go through new highs, I'm still on that 5% heat. And yeah. I'm still on that 5% heat. You know,
yeah, and that's just about being disciplined, mate. And that's good.
And a few weeks ago, I did the same thing again. I cut all positions before, you know, it wasn't a black swan event, but it was because we knew about it.
Yes.
But it turned out to be the same sort of result, you know.
Well, you can touch on that. I mean, if you want to just expand, what were you seeing in the markets? Because everyone's been scratching their head since last Friday. What were you seeing and charting? And then you said, you know what, let's just get out of this ahead of the time. Because I know that you were out 99% of the time.
I had three good winners on the table. I had a big multi-hour trade in Gamma. I had Restore and I had WYG. And I had about five other bitty trades, what were just up and down.
Yeah.
And I had a few micros as well, what I'd already de-risked at 100%, and I was just letting a runner see if I could get a runner on them.
Yeah.
And I watched the market put that run in, and the run, it went up on quality stocks and dividend stocks. It didn't go up on any small caps. You know, and I watched the sort of relative weakness in the small caps against the large caps. And I run an index trend model, and it showed it clearly. Small caps, the arrow was weak. You know, large caps and sort of, especially FTSE 100 and Dow stocks, the arrow, that was that led the market up. It was a flight to quality.
Yes.
And the small caps, just the liquidity dropped through the floor and they didn't respond to the rise.
Didn't participate at all, did they?
So, no. And because I was holding, you know, small caps, you know, I you know, this is going to, when something doesn't go up, when the market, you know, shows relative weakness, it will go down fastest. So, you know, that's what I did. I just cut everything. Literally, I think the portfolio, my own portfolio has done basically nothing since last August. It's just flat.
Right, okay.
And that's a result in a market like this for a trend following system.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like always defend. You're always playing defense. You know, you've got, I'll defend the portfolio at any cost. And yeah. I'd rather, and all my spreadsheets, I put my sell charge in up front so I know exactly where I am. You know, I don't have to add that on after I've sold it. So I know exactly where I am with heat and with sell charges before, and I just, you know, I just liquidate, sit on the side. You know, I've got, you know, it doesn't matter what price I get in because I position size. You know, there's a lot of broken charts. I've got to wait for those to set up. I'd rather have a clear mind and just, so, you know, something what I swing trade, that's swing trading is the money what sort of, it allows me to sit here.
Yes, I understand
and,
that. Yeah.
And swing trading, I will trade tight little moves, you know, the steps. I will trade the steps in an uptrend. And, you know, we had a good run on swing trades. The swing trades has really performed really well, though I haven't taken a great deal of trades. You know, I've probably taken below 20 trades in the last year, swing trading, maybe a few more. But
yeah.
But that's performed really well over the last, you know, while the market's been pretty bad.
Okay. So
and it runs in swings and roundabouts. You know, the small caps will be great and then they'll be bad like they were, I think it was 2014, they went a bit funny. And, you know, then the swing trading will be good. And so the swing trading is doing really well now, but, you know, the trends are all broken.
You've covered all that, Jason. I just wanted to ask, given that you don't really mind what you pay, yeah, and you're looking at the trends and you're looking at all the charts, is there any sector that you don't actually participate in? Do you cover the AIM stocks? Do you cover the blue chips? Do you cover retail, insurance, etc.?
I will trade anything.
Right.
You know, it's like playing top trumps. You know, when you get your list of stocks.
Yes.
You know, if there's a really good gold stock is set up, and then there's like a gold miners ETF or something, you're going to get more bang for your buck if you swing trading in the stock.
Yeah.
You know, the beta. But, you know, if I was wanting to hold one for a nice trend, I'd probably take the other one, you know, and build into that because it'll probably have less volatility on its way up and it'll cause me less problems.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a compounding. When we talk about compounding, it's... If you're an investor and you've got a job, the dividend way works well over time.
Yeah.
But if you want to sit here and if you've got a, you want to try and sort of, you say you've got a small account, that's out of the window for you straight away. You know, if you've only got 20 grand or 10 grand, you've got to go down to something you can make money and compound faster.
Yeah.
So it's exactly the same on a smaller time frame, and that's swing trading. So instead of trading the bigger trends, you're trading the smaller trends, and you're just risking 1% at stop. And sometimes you'll get the odd 8R trade, you'll get the odd 10R trade, but you'll get many sort of break even, and all your losers will be one. So, you know, the sum at the end of the day is how many R did you make on your positive ones from your losing trades, and in 2012, my best month in 2012 had my lowest win rate. I had I think it was 43% win rate, and that made more money than when I had a 70% win rate.
Now, can you explain that for some people that don't understand that, Jason? Because I understand that because I suppose, you know,
Because I risk.
because, yeah, it's about
Because, yeah.
sizing again, yeah.
Yeah, I risk 1% at stop. Now, compounding works. If you've got a £100,000 account and you're risking 1,000 per trade at stop, as that account grows, what you risk at stop grows.
Increases, yeah.
So the compounding effect month on month really works for swing trading on the faster you turn over trades, whether it's a win or a loser, so long as your winners are bigger than your losers. And you know, if you're right, if all your winners are two and all your losers are one and you're right half of the time, you're doing very, very
Very
well.
well, yeah,
You
indeed.
know? But the results are lumpy. So the thing with the thing what the main psychological thing with trading is you'll put two swing trades on and you'll get two. Say you've got four running in the space of 3 days and two will hit your stop straight away. And you go bang, bang, there's £2,000 off, you know, 2% off your account. And then the next two trades will chop around near your entry point and that. And then the psychological thing is like you're playing for a draw. But you know, if you trail a stop mechanically, you will get big winners. And scaling out of you, it comes down to a very simple thing. When you get your results, don't just look at your results. Look at I put how many days I'm in those trades as well, and you'll find that your losers sometimes you get stopped out on the same day, so all your losers will be 1 or 2 or 3 days, but your winners need to be longer than your losers in time value,
Yeah.
because it's very rare that you're getting a winner and it goes straight up in your favor and really gets the good. It's very rare that the meat of the move is done in 2 days, but in on the losing side, nearly all of it's done in 2 days.
Yeah, that's very true because people are accumulating the stock over a couple of days, aren't they? Whereas when they're getting out en masse. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's noise, sometimes
Yeah,
it's stories.
just when you're wrong, you find out quickly,
Very
and
true.
it's just and it's just the tighter you stop, the quicker you find out. But the more multiples of that, because if you've got a 10-point stop or it's a 2% stop, it's you know it's multiples of that.
Yeah,
So you know
no.
if it goes up, you know you got a 10% stop and it goes up 40%, you've made 4R.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're wrong, it usually happens fast. And
Fast,
just
yeah.
you one good thing to sort of just backtesting your results is just say how long did I hold those winning trades,
Yeah.
and if you're holding your losers for say 2 weeks and you're holding your winners for 5 days, you've got a big problem. You know, it's and the problem is you're not taking your losers quick and you're not letting your winners
Just run, yeah.
run,
Okay.
and that's simple with any time frame. That simple thing. And another problem will be scaling out of winners. Now, scaling out does have its merits, but mechanically trading will usually yield more money every time. Because what scaling out does, especially on shorter time frames, is it lowers the amount of shares you're going to have on your winner. So if you scale out of a winner, you're never going to have a huge winner. But if you add to a winner by trailing your stop and say adding half an R again, so you've halved your risk, but you've got more shares running, your 2R, 3R becomes closer to your price.
Yeah.
So it's the exact opposite of the Martingale effect is what makes the big money. Being able to add to winners. And I would say that I tend to just trail while the markets are chopping. But if the markets take the highs out and start you know, put a retrace in and hold that retrace, then that's the time to be adding to trades, not snatching at winners. You
Right.
know, there is times in the market where, you know, one will fit better than the other. But if you're always on the website, there's something, the simple guide to risk management, and it goes through scaling. I've done a lot of pieces on scaling and just give you the results, and the results don't lie. The only thing what it helps with is the psychological. So
Psychology, yeah.
that's all it helps with, but it doesn't help on the P&L.
Okay, I always have very varying discussions with people as to the importance of psychology and money management and strategy and etc. etc. What percentage would you put as an importance with regards to personal psychology and investing? Jason?
Percentage as in?
As in 100%. The skill of trading or investing, what percentage of weight would you put on psychology?
Well, I mean, it's basically the difference between you winning and losing. It's that simple. It is that you've got to, everything you think you know, it's probably the opposite.
Yeah.
And until you bang it into a spreadsheet and prove it to yourself, then you've got to, you can't argue with these figures. And there's a few compounding spreadsheets and a few position sizing, videos on the website what will just prove those facts for you. But obviously there is what happens with when you're doing the adding to the winners and things like that, you've got to be consistent in what you do.
Yeah, it is a lot to do with discipline. Now, Jason, I've got a couple of questions here I wanted to go through with you. Yeah. So I'm going to rephrase some of these because obviously you're essentially a trader now, having started with funds when you first started out when you were younger.
Yeah.
What has been the greatest lesson that you've attained since you started trading?
Probably, obviously, flattening positions when the markets make a major break and just keeping yourself sane to be able to sit on the sidelines and assess the situation, because you never miss anything in it. People get scared of dumping positions, but you know, you've got to have the money to buy these things, so never be scared of cutting. Obviously cut losers where you were going to cut the loser before you even got in the position,
and that's about your planning beforehand, prior preparation.
Sometimes you get chopped out of a position, just let it take your stop first.
Yeah.
Because it's so cheap to get back into a position, and especially if it's an aim one where you don't have stamp duty, or a swing trade where you just do it on a spread account or something. Just sit back, give it a day, think about it. Was I chopped out of that trade? And then it will cost you a very small amount. There's another video on the website what it compares averaging down against getting stopped out for 1%. And then taking the trade again and getting stopped out, and taking the trade for a third time and getting stopped out, and the third trade, you know, from the lower level, totally eclipses the gains you would have made from averaging down and it not going against you.
Okay.
So that's one thing, and probably the main thing. And this was sort of when I first. I think it was 2008 when I first sat here and said I've got to do this more active, is just cut all magazines and any news like that and media and you know, don't let anything skew your judgment, because if price is rising, volume's entering the share, it fits your criteria for your whatever your own fundamentals are. Which everyone knows for me, I like to trade towards accelerating growth on something like that. Just, you know, you should have planned that trade before you got in it. Don't let any magazine. On one of the good winners I had, someone sent me a message and said the shares magazine has said this, so I've closed the trade. You know, it's like that was the big winner. So it's.
Right. I was going to ask you that next, actually. What has been your wisest investment decision to date?
Wisest investment decision.
Yeah.
That would be cutting trades 2 or 3 weeks ago, and cutting trades last July. And the worst decision I ever made was holding a couple through 2011.
Okie dokie.
So they're all on the losing side. My wisest decision.
No, that's cool. That's cool. I mean, and this is the beauty of it. We learn far more from our losers and our mistakes than we do from our greatest victories. You know what I mean? That's what happens.
Yeah.
And I think Boris Johnson will probably be able to say something about that in his next book. You know,
I suppose on the winning side is just trailing stops under defined breaks in trend and not being afraid to take them, because that's how you get the big winners. Not getting shaken out on sort of daily trend pullbacks.
Yeah.
Know where the monthly trend is going to change, and if you're a longer term trader and you're trying to, or like a trend trader for me, when I'm trying to get a big one running, you know where that monthly low is, and you know, or the bottom of that base, and don't try and double guess it. you know.
Okay.
Usually, you know, 9 times out of 10, it'll usually knock everyone out and then do a little bit of a rally and then dump. And I just get out on when it knocks me out, because the one watt does keep going down. Like we've had a few in the last year.
Oh, yes, we have, yeah.
And they've worked either way for me. And, you know, I know that the big loser costs me more than the small bouncers, what I probably would have struggled to sell anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't like to... The only thing you can control is where you get out. And that's the most important part of any trading, no matter what views you have or anything. Where you get out is the difference between winning and losing.
And maintaining a trending upwards portfolio as well.
Where you get out on your winners, yeah. Where you get out on your losers.
Yeah.
And another thing I'd like to add is a lot of people are looking for value in AIM shares. And you know, probably it's like all the best shares will trade at 52-week highs. But there's another fact that probably all the best shares, what are going to make big gains, might already be in the 250. You know what I mean? They will get there at some point. So if you're loading your portfolio in AIM shares and you're having too much faith in AIM shares, I would say it's a very risky game to play, definitely in this market. You know, it can go either way. So, you know, I do split my portfolio up a bit, but out of this market leg, I think there'll be some very good stocks what are right under your nose, what will sort of, you know, if this is the bottom, they could really do well. If this isn't the bottom, at some point it will be.
Yeah.
And the best shares will probably, it's like Howden Joinery. What a great move that had last year, or, you know, we traded it on the way up.
Yeah.
And Howden Joinery did 50% and made a massive amount on a swing trade by adding to the winner. And the story stock of the day was Boom. And where is that? You know, it's...
Yes, indeed. You know,
the best one was Under Your Nose, and it was going up, and it was going up for a reason, and it had accelerating growth. And then they came out and said, we're actually going to beat expectations.
Yeah.
So growth was already accelerating, and they actually came out and said it was going to beat that. That is a no-brainer.
Exactly. You've always got to look out for those, you know, expectations are going to be higher.
You know,
phrases.
People think I'm just a technical trader, but no, I just stick to... I keep it simple. I don't kind of get lost in the value side, because I know many of the biggest winners in history, a high percent of them, were pretty bad on the valuation front when they made the meat of their rise.
Well, that goes back to William O'Neill's book, doesn't it? How to make money in stocks. And he always looked at, he said, look, people ignored the price of Amazon with regards to its PE, and Apple being another example, and they were like, that's too expensive, and the stock just carried on. So yeah, that's you've mentioned that book, that's one of my favorite books, and I recommend that to everybody else. Which apart from that book, Jason, which is your favorite book or favorite books?
Come Into My Trading Room. Is that Bantharp? Let me just... I'm going to bring up my recommended reading page.
Go for it.
My favourite book is Stan Weinstein's Secrets for Profiting in Bull and Bear Markets.
I don't think I've read that one.
It will teach you some very basic sort of trend and base, and that for a learner as well, that is just such a great book.
Okay.
It will put you on the right side of the market.
I'll have to be looking at that one, mate. Thank you.
obviously, William O'Neill, and that book takes maybe 5 or 6 times reading it and a lot of chart time to really soak it in.
Agreed, yeah.
I would also say Come Into My Trading Room, which is Alexander Elder.
Yep.
And Trade Your Way to Financial Freedom, which is Bantharp.
Right,
and that will teach you all about position sizing and things like that. Obviously, Market Wizards is pretty good on the sort of that sort of thing. And another one, what moves on from William O'Neill and sort of is good for people who want to build positions, sort of not just swing trading, but but Momentum, sort of swing trading, Mark Minervini's book.
Yeah, I've got that one. Yeah,
that gives you some really good stats and some really good. It kind of it's a bit of O'Neill in there as well, isn't there?
Yeah,
and that's a really good book as well.
Yeah, he's very, very good, Mark. And he's on Twitter as well for those that want to follow him. And he does converse quite openly regarding what he's up to. So that's an extremely good book.
I use him and Dan Zanger as a market feel for that style.
Yeah.
Because if they're building trades, you know, they're trying to get that style of momentum working.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the shorter term swing trading stuff is, I mean, Zanger does that as well. But it's good to, that's what Twitter's good for, is you know, those two people. I opened like the tweet deck thing last year, and then I did a list of the American, you know, I'd put a few people in there.
Yeah.
It just gives you a really good feel of what the actual, these are the guys who are multi-millionaires.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they know exactly what they're doing, and you can get a really good market feel just by watching what they're doing.
What they're up to, yeah, because they tend to be ahead of the curve and they tend to be watching every single minutiae of detail as well. So
such a good market feel off the best in the world, and it's free.
Exactly. That's the whole point, isn't it? There's other people out there that know more than you and I will ever know, you know, yeah. And that's the beauty of it. So, Jake, we've only got a couple of questions left. If there was one thing that you could change regarding the investing or trading landscape, what would it be?
Probably a limit margin.
Okay, expand, please.
Just spread bet accounts and that. I use them. They're good. You know, they're really good. And there's a way. You have risk in trading, and part of that risk is actually how much money you've got in an account. Because companies do go bust.
Yeah.
So, in a way, have the money to pay. If you're going to use margin, I don't use margin. I what I do is I have my margin. I have it in premium bonds or in the bank or whatever. And I just have in my spread betting accounts, and I have three of them because I use them for different things. I just have in what I need in. So that's limiting risk in a way. But when it comes down to limiting margin requirements, I just think the industry... It should be, you shouldn't be allowed to give people so much margin. It's just, that's why people blow up. So,
blow up, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
you know, it's just basically the whole industry is, what's the trading lifetime of someone who opens a spread betting account?
You know? It's for some people who are highly, you know, haven't practiced, it's under a year. You know, and for some that have got a larger amount of money, that it's 2 years. They don't last long. You know, the long term ones, the ones that are at it for 3 to 10 years, are down to the under 20%.
That's it. And
it's got no discipline, like you said.
Another thing, I don't know if I'm going off topic a bit here, but a lot of people, what I've learned from social media is how obsessed they are with market makers and this and that, you know, and spreads and, oh, they're marking it down. And this, all these excuses people have for why they're not, oh, my stop was hit. You know, you've got to understand that is part of life. That's part of trading. It's just part of doing business. And if your strategy doesn't, if being chopped out of trades or, being, you know, hit with a wide spread or getting slipped on a stop or on an entry is affecting your trading, it's you know, that's just part of the game. It's, you know, if you're trading illiquid stocks, you're going to have more problems. So if you're not position sizing, it's your own fault if those things are affecting you.
Yeah.
They shouldn't affect you. They are absolutely, you know, I get chopped out of trades quite often when I'm quite active in the markets. But, you know, I just give every trade a clap. What takes me, go, you know, that's a win for you. And it's, you know, most of the time it's just because it's a liquidity problem. And it's just, if you're winning over the long term, that is part of the game. Learning how to lose is how you win.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're still in that spiral of blaming the market maker or blaming this or thinking there's some secret code in the market makers,
yes,
you're just lengthening that learning curve, and you'll go full circle, and then you'll come back to what actually matters. It's an auction, and price is going up or it's going down, and it's not a case of there's more buys or sells. It's a case of people are prepared to buy on, you know, on the ask.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they're prepared to buy, you know, hit the bid. You know, that's why it goes up and down. It's not a case of there's more sellers than buyers. It's just where the buyers are prepared to buy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, it is an auction at the end of the day. Yeah. And don't let anything sort of change that.
There's a fantastic quote, and this is about people who lose on the stock market and also can't understand or take when they're not winning. Resentment is like a poison waiting for the other person to die. That was done by Malachi McCourt, and this is it. This is what goes back to the question I was asking you before about the psychology of investing and trading. And if you're in it and you need to be in it for a long time, you've got to organize yourself and have strong emotional strength. And the emotional psychology of trading, I believe, is way beyond 60%. Because if you're there trading and you're watching stuff and you're analyzing stuff, the discipline it takes to actually not take a trade is almost greater than it is to actually do a trade. And when you've lost, it's the psychology of getting back into another trade or the same stock again. Because for a very long time, I would never buy a stock which I had a loser on. And if there's a stock I was considering and I missed the entry point and it went up 5%, I'd be like, you know what, I'm not going there again now. I can't buy that stock. It's gone up another 10%. And then I'd watch it over the next 2 months, 3 months, sometimes a year, and it would just carry on climbing and carry on climbing carry on climbing. And I'd be sitting there going, oh. So that took me a long time to learn the lesson. Say, look, Pete, you might have missed that opportunity, but the opportunity will come back. And if it doesn't come back, maybe you have to buy it anyway because the trend, what you saw, but you then missed, is still intact. So go with it.
Yeah, you've got to understand. I think I've said this before, but, you know, when something takes a while to base out, say, and then it goes to 52-week highs and everyone thinks it's too expensive because they missed it.
Yeah.
But what you've got to think of, it's like, say you're in the Alps and you've got no ski lift and you're climbing one side of that, you know, that mountain.
Yeah.
You've got to get to the top because you've got to get down to the camp at the other side. And once you get to the top, which is that 52-week high, you've got to think of it as a mountain ridge and the path of least resistance all of a sudden is down, which is up in the market because there's no supply. You know, all those people who bought at a higher price don't have to get out to break even now. And another thing, what we'll just, I use monthly, if you just filter for a rising 100 day and the 100 day above the 200, say, and don't even look at the rest, because there's no need to, for me, there's no need to look at the rest. You know, if it's not above the rising 5 month, which is the 100 day, it's not going up, and I know it's not going up.
Yeah,
and I know how long things take to base out, and sometimes it will go up and then it will fall through the floor again. But, you know, I know that all the ones what are actually going to keep going up are going to be there.
Yeah.
So if you just limit your horizon down to just things what are going up, and then all you say is, well, if I put my stop below this previous consolidation and it moves to a new high, it shouldn't trade below that last low. And then you position size for that, and then you just take your brain out and you go, look, it's only 1%,
yeah,
you know, or it's 0.5%. You know, I can do this 200 times without blowing my account.
Yeah, and also you can put in place a trailing stop if you want to as well.
And what I like to say is if something goes up a multiple of what you risk, so on a tight swing trade, sometimes I will trail it on like a 3 day low or a 2 day low, but after a normal reaction, which is a normal retrace, I try and let that get out of the way, and then I'll trail a bit. And, you know, that puts that, so it's got no heat on the trade.
Yeah, I get that.
And then you can add another one.
Yeah.
And you just let that one play out, and don't you know, people, they snatch at winners, and it's the worst thing you can do. But you've got a defined level where if it traded above that level and it's going to be a winner, that means it won't trade back below this level.
Below it, yeah.
If it goes down below that level, puts. I got Polly a few weeks ago, and I missed the trade. It chopped me out straight away, and then it came back down. It was the best gold miner what hadn't moved, and it was a tight consolidation. And then it moved down to its rising five, which, you know, I actually said in the room, I said, I've got to take this trade, but I think it might come back to the rising five. And it did do. So it chopped me out, and then I was doing something for the website and missed the entry, and it went up 25-30%, you know, in days. And that would have been a 10-hour winner for me, but I missed it. But that's just one of those things. You've got to be able to just take that trade again.
Yeah. Something I've learned, yeah.
where are all the best stocks? Well, I know all the best stocks now are actually near new highs, and all the bad ones aren't near new highs.
Yeah.
But if they put in a new 52-week high, and that will bring the five-month moving average up, and then it'll put it in that zone where I'll see it. So that will be a fresh one in the zone, and that one could be a big winner if the markets keep going. So, you know, you've got to go where the ones that are rising are if you want to get the best. You know, you want to position yourself in. If you want to go to Edinburgh, you don't get on a bus to London. It's as simple as that.
No, that's a very. I love that analogy. Thanks for that,
Jay.
You don't
stand on the wrong side of the carriageway with your thumb out.
Yeah.
So what are the chances? You know, yeah, but it's got to go up.
No, it doesn't.
So, and it's very. I know it's very. Not. It's not the investing style. When I was investing, I only kept things what were going up as well.
Yeah.
So I'm consistent.
No. It all goes back to psychology and discipline, Jason, which is why
I do understand that people can average losers.
Yeah.
But I did a piece on the book. What was the all the talk with the rabbits and I can't remember what it's called now.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure which book you're talking about there. Sorry.
Tell you in one second. Hang on. The Art of Execution.
Ah, right. Yes. The book. Yeah.
And a lot. The talk on Twitter was, you know, but he's using Martingale, or, you know, averaging the losers and that. Now, you know, if you put me in that book, I'm an assassin straight away. I know where I'm out. You know, that job's done for me. But On the other side of it, the ones who averaged into trades, they a lot of people think they're averaging down, but they're not. They're averaging in. They had money spare on the sidelines to build a position, and it's tucked away on one of the pages. It says they were prepared to add at a lower price, and even at a higher price.
Yeah.
You can't have your full position on something what's only gone down and not have your full position on something what's going up. Because if you did that, all your winners what were winners straight away would have, say, 1% invested. All your losers would have 5% invested. So all your best winners need to have the full position, no matter if they're going up or they're going down. And it's a bit of a dangerous. You know, you've got to read that book again and go, hang on a minute. You know, all the winners added to the winners as well. They didn't just average the into the losers. And another big point on that was none of those traders were trading AIM shares.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's, you know, people think that something can't go down 90%. But I'll you know,
many companies have, and so have blue chip shares as well. So it's not the same.
Went halved in price.
Yeah.
Oh, ASOS on the way up halved in price maybe three times.
Yeah.
And that was the best riser.
And going back to what you were saying earlier, you've got to remember also that Next company almost went bankrupt, you know, and was down at, you know, in the penny share region as well before it hit £70. So there's lots of companies out there.
So if you're gonna take an approach like that, you've got to be thinking, you know, wider stops on your first position, you know, and then just understanding that you've got to be prepared to add to your winner as well, because you've got to have your full position on your winner. So you can't just have loaded up sort of average trades. Yeah. You might as well just put your money in the bank if you're going to do that. And
But that's the beauty of it, Jason, in the sense of that Lee Foreman Shaw book, it works for some people, you know, and some people swear by that book. And there's lots of people who, I mean, I bought that book for one of my Twitter friends, and because she was talking about it at the Master Investor Show, and I said, look, yeah, here's the book, take it away and let me know what you think about it, you know. And she tweets about it almost on a weekly basis now, but it's not for everybody. This is
No,
the great thing about trading investing, is that there's so
I
many
think it's
different
a, I
strategies out
think it's a
there.
great book.
Yeah.
I really think it's a great book, but I just think people have just they've just flossed over that very important fact that they actually added to the winners as well.
Adding, yeah,
You know,
you're
they
increasing
didn't.
your exposure. And this goes back to the analogy that I use to some of the people that I coach and mentor, Jason, right? Is that sat navs are wonderful things, all right? But you don't need to use them all of the time.
No.
You need to use your brain. You don't have to switch off and drive into a Ford, you know what I mean? Or the lake, just because you're just always going in the car and going, I'll put the sat nav on.
There's
You've got to
also a
think for
very
yourself.
another very in sort of important thing about it is if you look at the times of the trades, what it was taken over, you know, they were a lot of them were averaged into sort of 2011, weren't they, and 2012, and you know, it's just picking a market where, yeah, they got smashed through sort of 2011. And they averaged into those trades, and it just seemed to me that, well, you know, anyone who averaged in that period into trades or even down on trades would have worked out better off by where we are now or on the way up. So, you know, no matter what you did back then, it would have give a good result in the last year or so.
Yeah, it's you can be very select. Anyone can be selective on time frames, exactly. So I get that.
I'm a bit skeptical about that, but it's a really good book. It makes some very good points, and I couldn't argue anything about it. All I could argue is that some people have missed out at that very important point of they were trading liquid good companies like, you know, big FTSE companies, what are, you know, good dividends and that, and they weren't trading AIM shares,
Yeah,
and certainly weren't micro area.
and the average down and a trending market. Now, Jace, I've only got one question left, mate. I'm
Okay.
concerned I've had you on here for nearly an hour and a half now.
Really?
If yes, I mean, this is the beauty of when you're talking and you're passionate about something that
Never
it's,
upload that.
you you could enjoy it so much. Now, if you were starting out in trading today, what would you do that you had not considered or unable to do when you first started, prior to when, i.e., prior to when you came back from Australia?
I wouldn't go down the sort of technical analysis sort of indicator route. I wouldn't get lost in that. I mean, indicators, what I oversold and overbought is probably the thing what makes spread companies the most money. I will tell you, all my best trades were overbought when I bought them, and they were overbought long after I bought them. And a lot of the ones what didn't work out were over sort of weren't overbought when I bought them. So overbought is a sign that something has got a lot of interest. And if there's a lot of volume in that overbought reading, there's a difference between overbought and overextended.
Yes,
And
overstretched, yeah.
you know, I buy from tight areas in charts, basing patterns, consolidations, and the beauty in that is tight ranges can only expand. So if you put your stop below a tight range, when it moves above it, if it's going to be a good winner, it can only expand. So if you're buying extended loose price action, what is up above two standard deviations of, say, that 5 month or something like that, they will come back in. And if it's already gone up 50, 70%, and you can see a visible base or consolidation, what's 2 or 3 months or more long, you've missed it. It will come back in, and at best, it will, you know, maybe 1 out of 20 of those trades will turn out to be a big winner. But, you know, your big winner will be eaten away by a lot of trades what did nothing. So never buy anything what's overextended. Wait for it to consolidate. Be ready to buy in a tight range. And It's the elastic band effect, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is.
You know, and if you just put two standard deviations on a 5 month moving average, you'll get a. That's what I use. It's very simple.
Okay. Now I've covered all my questions, Jason. So thank you ever so much for that. I'm going to be putting a link to your website at Trading Bases as well. Is there anything else that we've not covered? I'm concerned that we've had you on here for a little while now. Is there anything you wanted to touch on that I've not touched on that you think is very important to share with our listeners?
I think that must be a record, 1.5 hours.
It probably will be, mate. Yes.
I can ramble on about this all day, risk management, you see, and it's very boring, but the boring stuff is what saves you money. And the only thing I'll say about the Trading Bases site, anyone wants anything covering on there, just send me a message, and if I haven't covered it already, I will do something on that. But I try to keep it to facts, and I'm quite blunt with my sort of approach sometimes, but it's because I've proved what I do.
Yeah.
And I don't like going against the maths, and I don't like, you know, I'll only buy something what proves a level for me. I don't like, so there's no ifs and buts with me. I'll just prove it on a spreadsheet. That's what I do. Yeah. And some people, it sounds a bit blunt, but you know, this is real money you're playing with here.
Yes, yeah.
And the website is just to try and save people from themselves sometimes. And a lot of the members have stayed members and said, you know, if you read it, there's a little video on the members' first page, and it, you know, it basically says, you know, trading is very hard. Most people lose money. You know, this website, if you know, it'll probably put off, you know, 90% of the people who visit it from even trading, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because if they haven't got the what it takes to really absorb what you're doing and really, you know, it's like, say, the psychological. Some people just go, "This is a lot of work." You know, it's just not worth it. You know, and to a lot of people, it won't be worth it. I'm very blunt with stuff like that. You know, a lot of people will lose money in this game. So I'm putting out there there's no secret sauce or snake oil. I just bring up the best sort of ideas I have on my watch list. I tell everyone how I trade these things. I even tell them it's not a tip site, but I do say when I'm buying things sometimes as well.
Yeah.
And I don't, they have to understand that if they follow someone in the markets, they have to understand how they are trading something, you know? So never, you've got to prove your own approach.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that's it, really.
Well, no, that's good, mate. I mean, the great thing about what you've said there is that, and it goes back, and then I'll change some of the wording of it. It goes back to George Soros, and we know what George Soros has done over the many years of investing, trading, all the rest of it. And if you were to change the word slightly to coincide with what you're doing now, I changed some of the words, is that, if investing and what you're doing is trading, if trading is entertaining, if you're having fun, you're probably not making any money. Yeah. Good trading, good investing is boring. Now, for those people that are wanting to get a 10-bagger and a 5-bagger and all the rest of it, your approach won't work for them immediately, won't be enticing for them. But their accounts are the ones that are going to get blown up. And the people that are listening to you and saying, Jason, this strategy that you've used, and I've tried it and applied it now over a year, and my account now has compounded up, and we're up 23% across the year. Those that are trying to get a 10-bagger and 5-bagger on little AIM stocks that have got no assets or are cash shells for essential reasons, they're never going to do that over the long term, and their accounts are going to get blown up. But those that listen to you and are disciplined and are patient and would only take the trades that fit certain criteria are going to be here long-term compounding returns.
Yeah. And the thing is, I could literally take the names off all the shares on the whole index, and I could trade anything. And I do trade micros and that as well, but I put a stop at all-time lows, and I buy when it trades above a base. And it actually makes more money that way than just put, you know, if you risk 1,000 at stop and get multiples of that, it makes more money than getting the exact low of the move and just putting £1,000 in that. And I did a video on that where I think 5 out of 6, it you know, my approach by position sizing beat the approach of getting the exact low, what nobody can do. So on a like-for-like basis, you've got to learn. And there is no extra risk, really, in trading something with no fundamentals. It's down to the risk how you load the trade.
So
you know, it's like the best company in the world can only get worse, and the worst company in the world can only get better. Or go bankrupt. But what I will say is, something what's cheap, a cheap price stock, can lose 50% overnight quite easily. But the highest price stock, you know, it's
unlikely, it's, isn't it? Yeah.
Very unlikely. The percent, you know, the percent of a very high price stock slipping your stop 50% overnight is so slim, but it's so high on a micro cap.
And that's a very good point. You know,
it's that being able to have a tight stop on a high price stock will make you a lot more money than loose on a micro cap.
Yeah.
So that's just another thing. There's a video on the website.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll be putting the link in regarding your website, mate. So that's great. Jason, we've finished everything there, mate. We've covered the whole gamut of strategies, etc. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on here. I'm going to stick a link on the blog regarding trading bases, and I look forward to corresponding with you over the next couple of months. And please, just, you know, as and when you want to do something with LSE Share Talk and myself, just get in touch, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on Conquer's Corner.
Okay.
And thank you for sharing your ideas and strategies today.
It's all just putting a few ideas out there to help people sort of stay afloat in this game. And that's all I do, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I just share what I do. I know there's no secrets in this game, and it's just a case of, you know, giving people a chance, basically, rather than just people ripping people off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
you got to spread the sort of good karma.
Yeah, that's what I'm. Well, you know, you see my tweets, mate. I'm all big on kindness and mindfulness, and people think it's a weakness, but they don't understand that that's the reason why, you know, I have the quality of life that I have. You know, and I look out for people, and people say, "Why, Pete? Why have you done this?" Or "Conquers, why have you done this?" And it's like, because I can.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, you got to feel good in yourself.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
Okay.
All right then, chap.
Thanks very much for having me, and look forward to listening to it.
Okie doke, Jason. Thank you very much, mate, and I'll speak to you soon. Take care. God bless.
Bye.
Bye for now, mate.